Morning Show. Waking up the city. Waking up the people. Because the day is coming at you. And now, the Good Morning Show on WBOK 1230 AM.
Wake up, New Orleans. Yes, indeed. I know you're up already on this beautiful day, man. We've had a whole lot of weather running through this area, but it's nice and sunny outside. Chamel Golden makes it golden, the early bird in the entire WBOK family. Chamel!
It is Wednesday.
CG, huh?
Wednesday is finally here. You know, we've been talking about this and talking about this. It's a really exciting day for us.
Yeah, it really is. Chamel, why don't you introduce our guest? We've been talking about this for quite some time, and unfortunately, this is your last week, and you know, gosh, we love you. We're going to miss you, but best thing we could do is have this important discussion about how we survive together, especially talking about race and class and society in America. But go ahead, Chamel.
Absolutely. So we're going to have a conversation about race matters. It's going to be a series of race discussions to promote better understanding. And we are joined right now by Dr. Michael Cohen. He is the chairman of the New Orleans Crime Commission, Ms. Arissa Arend, mediator and psychotherapist, Pastor Tom Watson, founder of the Summit on the African American Male, and Mr. Brian Trashner, a Republican strategist. It's really going to be our opportunity to dig a little bit deeper. We want to make sure also that your voices are involved in this conversation. So as we're asking questions, we're thinking this stuff out, we're debating it amongst ourselves, feel free to call in. Our number is 504-260-9265, 504-260-9265.
Well, let's get right into it. I'd like each of our guests to introduce themselves and why you agreed to talk about this very important discussion. And we're going to start off with the question, is there a problem or is there an issue? Is there a problem? Is there a problem with race in America? Dr. Michael Cohen.
Good morning, and thanks for the invitation to take part. So on the question, of course there's a problem, there's an issue about race, and I think the problem is, I would call it institutional racism.
Well, thanks again. This is Brian Trashner, token Republican, right here at WBOK. No, thanks for having me back. Always enjoy coming here because we always tend to talk about tough issues and we don't hold back, and that's why I enjoy it. Is there a problem with race in America? And I would say absolutely. And the question is it getting better or is it getting worse? And what can we do about it? And hopefully we can tackle a few of those questions while we're here today.
Good morning, New Orleans, and the listening audience beyond New Orleans, to Oliver, Chamel, and all the great people here. I'm Tom Watson. I serve as senior pastor at Watts Memorial Teaching Ministries. And as I was introduced, founder of over 21 years ago, the citywide summit on the plight of the African-American male. Want to thank this great station for at least having the discussion, and I'm sure at some point we'll have some conceptualization of actionable solutions. I am here because this is dear to my heart. I like to call myself a guy on the ground, so to speak. I've been pastoring now 26 years in New Orleans, and I'll just open with this. I pastor the most segregated hour in America, 10 and 11 a.m. on Sunday morning. So every time I get up on Sunday mornings in a white neighborhood in New Orleans, as a matter of fact, at least for the last 19 years, I still wonder why I feel so isolated. Mm-hmm. But I don't take it personal. It's just an interesting phenomenon that I'm able to experience in the heart of the Garden District, along with some other things I do in the community. But so I'm happy to be here. I think this narrative is so precious, important, and I would think that it's not only race but also racism will evolve into. I'm thinking I don't want to push any particular
That. This discussion, we want it to come from your heart, your
Absolutely.
Soul, and your mind.
Okay, cool.
And where you are. This is about a real serious conversation about all the issues around race and race matters.
Absolutely.
And all those pieces and all those tenets and parts of that puzzle.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm happy to be here. I'll shut down now.
Good morning. My name is Arissa Arend. And I'm a mediator and a psychotherapist and a writer. I wrote the book on the New Orleans Black Panther story. It's called Showdown and Desire. The Black Panthers Take a Stand in New Orleans. I'm interested in what you said, Pastor, because I do a lot of work with my church, Trinity Church, which is also in the Garden District.
Yeah, right.
And we are trying to become an anti-racist church.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I've done a lot of work with the People's Institute as well, and all of our vestry members have now been through that.
So that means Trinity. I'll preach at Trinity, and your pastor will preach at Watts Memorial.
Absolutely.
If y'all serious about that.
Yeah.
We got to exchange pulpits.
Henry Hudson would love to do that.
Yeah, we need to talk about that. Yeah. I know that's a little bit more private, but it represents what we're talking about.
Exactly.
And I mean that. I really
yeah.
do.
No, yeah. He would love to do that.
Okay.
Yeah. So I also serve on the Episcopal Bishop's Commission on Race and Reconciliation.
Oh, okay. Wow.
And then I'm also Oliver and I are on the board of Community Mediation Services together.
Oh, wow.
Tamel, you know, let's get right into it. Everyone has agreed that each individual has said, yes, there's a problem with race in America. Then my question, if someone said there is a problem, my question would be why? So if we admit that there is a problem with something, especially today here in 2015, why is that an issue? Especially given where we were, what we've been through, why is that still an issue?
So I'd like to take it back to
Absolutely.
What Dr. Cohen said about institutional mm-hmm. racism, mm-hmm. because that's really important, especially in 2015 when we think about structures that have been created and continue to perpetrate harms against people. Can you delve a little bit deeper about what institutional racism means to you? And do you see any examples of folks really doing things to dismantle institutional racism?
Okay. So what I mean by institutional racism are policies and practices that are connected to skin color, where someone has the power to reinforce their prejudice on someone else. And so as opposed, say, to, this is a distinction from the People's Institute, as opposed mm-hmm. to bigotry, you know, personal racist individuals, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about institutional policies and practices. And the one that is looming largest on my horizon right now would be the results of the so-called war on drugs and what that's done in terms of the numbers of African American men who are locked up right now for offenses that once upon a time would not have carried that penalty. And you know what interests me, obviously the people around this table think that there's a problem with racism, but I suspect that the differences might have to do with what to do about it. And honestly, talking about race, in my experience, is not a very helpful way of actually addressing these problems and sometimes makes them worse.
You know, I was trying to think hard about the genesis. When I was when I was invited here to talk about this topic, I was trying to think about the genesis of why. I think most people in America, I'm looking at polls online that show that most people in America still think that there's a problem with race in this country, and that a lot of people, both white and black, at least according to this Pew poll, think that it's getting worse, despite the fact that there's an African-American president, there's been, you know, African-Americans in very prominent positions throughout federal government now. But, you know, in 2015, if someone comes to America from another country, you know, the first thing that we try to get them to do is assimilate to our culture, learn the language, you know, learn our way of life, become an American, right? Well, if we're talking about, and I'm just going to assume for our purposes that when we're talking about race, we're mainly talking about, you know, prejudice against African Americans or how African Americans are viewed with regards to race in this country. You know, when the majority of African Americans came to this continent, first of all, it was not voluntarily. I think we all know that. But there was also absolutely no desire on the part of the people here to get those people to assimilate. You know what I'm saying? They were brought here involuntarily for a specific purpose, and they were not, okay, we're not going to make Americans out of you. You know what I'm saying? We're going to make you obedient, whatnot. Now, you know, fast forward, you know, through emancipation, through the civil rights movement, I think that the fact that there was no early effort to have people assimilate has kind of carried over, if you will. I'm trying to think of the best way to explain it. And so now you have a situation where a lot of African-American kids are brought up in poverty, unfortunately. Sometimes they are, even though they kind of sit through the good government type stuff in classrooms at home and in their communities, they're not really taught that, hey, the American dream, it can work, just not for you. You know what I mean? They're told that. They tend to start to idolize, you know, people who maybe are not good examples instead of, say like kids in the white community might look up to like a CEO of a big company or a, you know, somebody who's been successful in something else. Whereas African American kids, a lot of them seem to look up to kind of the rap culture, if you will, which and again, a lot of those guys aren't really tough guys. You know what I'm saying? They take on the persona of a tough guy to sell records, but again, it permeates into those communities, and so I think that a lot of those kids are aspiring to be the wrong thing. And then they're not getting the foundation at home to say, hey, the American dream can work for you. Get an education, you know, get a good job, find out what you want to do with your life, and you can do anything you put your mind to.
That's why it's a system, systemic racism.
Yeah, and again, you know, this opportunity is important in the sense of be it systemic, structural, or institutional racism, as it was just called, in that even though we, in some cases, may have opportunity to have a good education, if you will, get a good job, we still have systems that don't work in our favor. And when we think about this whole issue of race, racism, and race relations, I think we have to put it in the perspective of what was, what is, and what is to come. And so what was is the fact that we were enslaved as a people. And we don't have to sit here and go through the whole history lesson, but you can't have a discussion on race without thinking about and dealing with, you know, still the repercussions. Even now in the 21st century, there are repercussions from slavery, Jim Crowism, and we can go on and on and on in the systems in which we operate. And so here I am, I'm almost 60 years old, but I didn't get into, if you will, the white world until I went to the military as a young lieutenant. And then that's from a military perspective, so that's a different kind of a system, right, where you still see racism. And to be honest with you, in the military, most of my colleagues were NCOs, non-commissioned officers, everyday guys. They were not the officers that I was supposed to hang with in the officers' club and in the bachelor's officers' quarters. Of course, before you're married, that's where you live if there's space on an installation. And so I saw it in the military, and I'll give you an example. I used to serve for a lot of my years as a reservist. I was a captain at this time right on the lakefront in the 377. It was then called TACOM. I don't know what it is now, Theater mm-hmm. Army mm-hmm. Area Command. Mm-hmm. And I would work hard on a weekend as a weekend warrior with white guys. And within a couple of days, for instance, I would see those same white guys in just the community, let's say on Canal Street, let's say in Lakeside Mall. Trust me, I felt like a ghost. I said, wait a minute, I just worked with you arm by arm, side by side, on military operations, standing in formation, and now you see me and don't even speak, you know. And that's very disheartening, and it's sad, you know. Again, I don't take it personal. I used to, but I'm a little older now. I put things in perspective. So be it years ago, be it now or in the future, we gotta have the conversation. And here's the deal. I believe the conversation such as this one has to continue. Here's the key. We just got to have the right people in the room having the conversation who can bring about change. And that's a whole leadership piece.
And I'm going to get back to that. Okay. I wrote that down. That's a powerful piece that Mike said about the conversation makes it worse. Because I want to challenge that. Arissa, white female.
Yeah. I'm feeling alone in here.
Hey, look, we're going to get to our callers in a minute. And one of our callers, the line's going to be lit up. So we really want people to make their point so we can get to the next callers. Go ahead.
Okay. And I'm so glad that Pastor Webster comes right before me.
Pastor Watson.
Watson comes right before me.
He's a good friend.
I'm thinking of Dwight.
I'll mix him up.
But, But what you said about now you see me and you don't even speak.
Yeah.
What I notice at my church and what I notice is hard about the conversation and hard about really dealing with structural and institutional racism is this whole white privilege thing. Because whites don't, I don't think it's just me, but we're not comfortable speaking about race. And we're not comfortable speaking about the history that created those structural problems today. And it's absolutely necessary to do that. So that's why I try to work mostly in my own community. Trinity is a very wealthy church and mostly Republican, Brian. Mm-hmm. So.
All right.
But
I thought I was alone.
Can I ask this question? Why are whites uncomfortable? I mean, it's not enough to just say that.
Let me,
and maybe you were about to say that.
Well,
I don't want to get ahead of you.
Let me
talking about race.
Let me answer as a psychotherapist. You all know so much more about the systems than I do, but I can speak to the psychology of it.
And that's why you're here.
It's because when we speak about race, we are questioning our very, what we think of as our identity. It happens to be a false identity, this superiority. Mm-hmm. But it's very, very difficult to give up what we think of as our identity. And unfortunately, here's where I want y'all's help, though. I mean, I think that identity comes with our mother's milk. I think it comes really, really early. I think by the time I can think about it and reason about it, it's almost too late.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, I am conditioned to think of myself as better than.
So you're saying it's in your DNA?
No, I'm saying...
You said mother's milk, so I was wondering what that meant.
Well, mother's milk means that...
From the beginning.
Very, very soon after
from
birth.
Those very close personal encounters.
Yeah. I mean, they've done studies on babies.
Right. Yeah. We're going to go to the lines and get our listeners involved. Line 3, Minister Mosley, peace, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning.
And thank you for holding.
There.
Thank you.
I'm glad to hear that you got the Reverend Tom Watson in on this and our white sister from the other church, because this thing of race and racism, and unless you're going to go to the root, you know, if you cut a tree down and you don't get all the root, the tree will just grow back.
Mm-hmm.
And this thing is deeper than what we see carnally. It's spiritual. Mm-hmm. Way back in the days of Moses, his own sister, who was black, made a mockery about Moses' wife, who was talking in what she was, and God let it be known how he felt about that.
Okay.
And Tom Watson could clear up the rest
okay.
of this.
So you're saying get to the root, Reverend. Okay. Thank you. Get to the root. Gotcha.
I think you're going to take another call.
Yeah. Line 1, Rem Wallace, you're on the air.
Good morning. Good morning to this entire panel. And certainly my accolades go to this iconic Amanda, Reverend Watson Memorial family. Reverend Watson has given his life entirely to this city. He's a very intelligent man. He can go anywhere and fit in any mold. He's the hippest preacher they got on the state line of Louisiana. I admire him. I'm appreciative of him. He speaks his mind. He's not afraid to say what he believes.
Thank you.
And he's not going to fudge what he wants to say. He's not going to sugarcoat it. I praise God for him, Mr. Watson. And it's the 45% Romney was talking about. We're still in it. We're not able to be buried with certain people still. So, you know, racism even at the graveyard. So we can talk about all the facts. It's something that folks have not really... grasp. It's a perception that's been conveyed from years and years and still being conveyed today. 6 o'clock news, you see the plight of the black community more than anything.
Thank you, Ramon.
We are the focus of negativity on a regular basis.
Okay.
That's the perception she got. And I know my sister is really sincere about what she believes, but Sunday is the most segregated hour of the day.
Thank you, Rem Wallace. Yeah.
So praise God for Reverend Watson. Continue doing what you're doing, man. You have a great vision for this city. God be with you.
God bless you, Reverend Wallace. Peace. Brother Roger, peace, you're on the air.
Hey, I just want to say that I think that we need to understand that those people who classify themselves as whites who practice racism against blacks, it's functional. They benefit from it. And I think to look for some great conversation with whites about it really keeps us in an inertia, not developing ourselves. And we had many, many well-known African-Americans who gave us the solution, Booker T. Washington, Elijah Muhammad, Marcus Garvey. And we're not studying the aspect that they did not want us to wallow in pity and to feel as if we couldn't do for ourselves. And I think that we need to understand that this, even if whites were to come out and make a great big confession that they have sinned against us, we're still going to be responsible for having to build our own community. Even the whites who were the lowest on the poll, the Irish, were pro-slavery. They were against blacks. They led riots against black people because they found the benefit of being white. It's functional. You benefit. You get residual results of being white. They know no other way, and
thank
they will
you,
not gamble
Roger.
To give it up
thank
whatsoever.
You. Thank you, Roger. Tamel.
So Roger's raising something that I think is really important to this conversation, and it ties on a couple of strands that we've heard
especially
before.
Especially with the benefit word.
Yeah, I want us to get to this last caller, but after the last caller and we go to break, I want us to talk about the conversation. Is this a conversation even worth having? Mm-hmm. Because Dr. Cohen raised a really good point
yes.
around, you know, whether this just keeps us in a cycle. And that's the same point that Roger's making. But then we have Patcha Watson who's saying, wait a minute, we have to start with the conversation.
Absolutely.
So I know we're going to try and get our last couple callers in before we go to break.
Right. We're going to go to Cross. You're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you for helping my uncle, Pastor Watson. But I want to mention about the institution and the lady who's the author of that book. I was in the desire, but I was sheltered from what the action that was going on. And I know my sister's a little bit older. And when you say institution, that was the federal government who, when Panthers were trying to just work with the community to keep us together from spreading out all this crime and stuff, you know. So it seemed like that should be one part of that
okay.
that institution
okay.
that and the government did it.
Gotcha. Thank you. Thank you, Cross, as always. But when we come back, absolutely correct. That's why I highlighted Dr. Cowan's conversation about is the conversation even worth it? And then Pastor Watson's comment that absolutely the conversation is worth it. And I think that's important that we figure that piece out. Tramell?
We're having a conversation about race matters here on the Good Morning Show. We're joined by Dr. Michael Cohen, Ms. Arissa Aaron, Pastor Tom Watson, and Mr. Brian Trashner. Stick with us after the break. The conversation will continue, and you've been listening to the Good Morning Show here on WBOK. Real talk for real times.
WBOK, real talk for real times.
You're listening to The Good Morning Show on WBOK, 1230 AM.
Welcome back to The Good Morning Show. Oliver O.T. Thomas, Chamel Golden, the early bird, and the entire WBOK family. Chamel, right back into the discussion. We go to the callers, and then we're going to get back into the question about the conversation.
Absolutely. So we're speaking right now. We're having our panel on Race Matters. It's a discussion to promote better understanding. And we are speaking right now with Dr. Michael Cowan, Ms. Arissa Arand, Pastor Tom Watson, and Mr. Brian Trashner. It's our roundtable discussion. We want to get your voices in, but the lines are packed, and we're trying to make sure to get as many voices in the conversation as possible. So we ask that you keep your comments short.
Absolutely. So we're going to have a solution segment. So if there's some solutions, please throw them out there so we can write them down so we can deal with them when we get to that segment. Line one, Carl, you're on the air with our esteemed panel.
Good morning,
good
Arissa and Pastor Watson and your guest. this is an important topic, and I'm going to get my points across quickly. Over the years, I've trained clinical social workers, and I know that's uncovered, Arissa, talking about it, as you know, but we have to address it. I had a undoing racism workshop a while back, and we really have to get to the root of this racism and talk about it comfortably because it's affecting this country. We will never be all we can be like Dr. King said unless we deal with it. And I train social workers. You cannot be an effective social worker if you're European and you don't realize that racism exists. You cannot help people. You cannot move them forward because in fact here's the problem. You cannot solve the problem.
Thank you, Carl. We appreciate you. Line two, Pop Jones, you're on with the panel.
Yeah, let me make mine short. I myself being a senior citizen, and I know I'm not a hater or anything of that kind, but I just don't believe it's in their heart to have that kind of, you know, feelings towards you. But I'll give an example. I had a man tell me of the other race that he knows that me and my companion love them, but yet he got family members that hate him, but yet he is faithful to them and treat them far more better than he treat us. And he admitted himself that we have shown love towards him. But I think it's in their heart. I don't believe that they could actually love us as black people. That's just my opinion. That's my experience.
Thank you, Pop. We appreciate you. Greg B., please, you're on the air.
What do you say, O.T. Martin? I'm going to be real quick, too.
Thank you.
I got one question and then one just statement.
Yes.
Where did it start where we portrayed Jesus as a white man in the Bible through pictures and all of that?
Mm-hmm.
Where did that come from? And my second thing is, remember who said this live on WBOK.
Mm-hmm.
After the president leaves the White House, the bathroom and the West Wing will be remodeled.
Thank you, Greg B.
In all fairness, they definitely did that after Clinton left.
Right. Where did it start? Who wants to answer Greg's question about the images of Jesus? When and where did that start?
I think the historical piece is it was the great artist.
Michelangelo?
Yeah.
Sistine Chapel.
Yeah. I mean, and then from Europe to America.
Right.
And it's interesting he would bring that up. A lot of people don't know the movement that my grandfather started in New Orleans was a movement that had a serious impact based on Catholicism. And when I became a pastor 26 years ago, the first thing I did, maybe the caller would appreciate this, is I made sure, listening audience, that I got all of the images of Christ out of the church that did not look like us. And I didn't want any images, black, white, green, blue. You know, I just thought that it was totally a misperception to have an image of a white Jesus in a church that's 99.9% black, and we're already confused as a people, and so we're sitting in church even more confused, bowing to a white image. And scripturally, the Bible even tells us, particularly in the Old Testament, we shouldn't have any idols or images of God, you know, in that sense of pictures and the like. And so it's a historical piece, and it had shifted in many cases. But
and before
course,
you finish that, because we're going to get into why do you think the conversation is important?
Yeah.
And
right.
Then I want to swing to Mike Cowan about why he thinks the conversation has been unproductive in many cases.
Yeah, and so my piece about this being important is that, first of all, we're in America and we ought to be free to talk about what we need to talk about. Of course, there ought to be parameters in the sense that we don't want it to evolve into something counterproductive. But there's a statement I kind of live by right now, where there's no confrontation, there's no resolution, and you cannot change what you tolerate. And I look at the issue of race, racism, and race matters as an important conversation with the right people in the room that can influence systems and influence policies and systemic issues as relates to racism and the like. For instance, here we live in a city where we obviously have a governmental structure. Can we imagine if that governmental structure, from the mayor to the city council to senators to reps and on, would be the ones that would be very comfortable in dealing with conversations and policies and making sure? And I know there's some things that may or may have been happening in this current administration as it relates to race, but I don't sense that it's been very profound. I don't sense that it's been very authentic. And I think sometimes when money drives a conversation, it has to be controlled and it's manipulated, and there are parameters where you're not free to really get anything done. So I see the leaders, not only in government, but as I believe you said a moment ago, in the faith community, I think there have been some strides where people have tried to deal with it. I applaud Trinity Church for taking that effort to try to make sure that it's anti-racist in its efforts to do what it's doing. So I think the conversation is important, because if you don't talk about it, you're a psychotherapist, I'm a social worker, I'm a pastor, you got to talk things out. You know, living in the community is like living in another family, the external family to your nuclear family. And in family life, in order to resolve issues and problems, there has to be conversation. So New Orleans is this big gumbo of a family with these racial issues, and if you don't want to talk about the family problem and problems that our community has, then you'll never come up with a narrative that leads towards some solutions. It has to be communicated. It has to be talked about. Again, where there is no confrontation, there is no resolution. It has to me, if you don't want to talk about it, the question would be, why are you afraid to talk about it? Or why are you thinking you shouldn't talk about it? I just think the right people, like in this room right now, like this great radio station, has to have this conversation not once a quarter, but as often as possible. Summits, workshops, whatever it takes to make this happen for our people and with our people.
And we're going to invite all our listeners. Of course, we know we have a lot of listeners that are white from different parts of the community. We invite you to call in. You call in on other issues. This issue is important, too. We'd like to know how you feel. Mike Holland.
So, Pastor, with all due respect, sometimes confrontation does not make things better. It makes things worse. And the problem that I see in the so-called honest conversation about race in New Orleans is that if you've actually been in some of them, as I have, this is what it really is. It's black people and reformed white people lecturing to white people about white privilege and never claiming the role of the black community in the problems that we have. One of the teachings of the People's Institute, for example, is that when you're in a city that's a majority people of color and you want to do something with collective leadership, all white people can do is follow people of color. That's wrong, and it's foolish, and you're never going to generate the energy that you need if you need the white community to change things by taking that kind of position. There's a certain conversation about race which is very good at one thing and one thing only, and that's producing white guilt. And white guilt creates inertia. It doesn't lead to solutions about anything. So I wasn't saying, is it worth it to have this conversation? What I said specifically is, sometimes this conversation makes it worse. And it's because what this conversation means, it's not a real two-way conversation. It's one group lecturing another.
So this is really important, and I think we need to dig a little bit deeper into this issue. We're having our conversation about race matters. It's a roundtable discussion as we dig a little bit deeper in these issues, and it's always we want to make sure our caller voices are involved. So feel free to give us a call, 504-260-9265. So can this be a conversation that you have with black people and white people? I think about some of the, you know, anti-racism principles where if you really dig deeper, it may be white people organize your community around what happens with race and structural racism. Black people, you know, organize your community, and then we come together for a conversation. We know we need to have the talk, but is there a way that it can be structured that moves us into real solutions?
Right.
I have a question. It's semi-rhetorical, semi-serious. Can anybody just off the top of your head think of one environment, whether it's controlled or otherwise, where racism is almost non-existent, if not completely non-existent? How about the Superdome during a Saints game? The feelings that are going on during a game, and when a Saints score, and you got – it's a very diverse crowd at a Saints game, at least in the section I sit in. Mm-hmm. And everybody starts hugging each other and high-fiving and all that, and I don't think anybody is even looking at, you know, what color the person next to him is. All they see is that jersey, you know, and that's the same
until the game is over.
Until, well, no, you're right. The game does end.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
And that's what I'm but what I'm right. saying is that we as we have a controlled environment in a vacuum where it's almost hard to even see racism, but then we go, so how do we keep that vacuum going? I guess
I don't think you can keep it going in any amusement atmosphere. Remember what the word amuse means. Mm-hmm. That means to avoid, muse the mind.
Right.
So you're voiding out your mind. It's like going to Disney World. Right. It's a fantasy. Right. And that's why fans are fanatical, because they're fans. And so in that atmosphere, you're in a fantasy world, and it's not real in terms of trying to get solutions. And again, the intent at the game is to enjoy the game, whether it's with a black or white or, you know, brown, it doesn't matter. You got to remember the atmosphere. And so when you're in that atmosphere, it's like me being in the military. It's a controlled atmosphere while I'm on duty. But when duty is over, you're free to do whatever you want to do. You can call me whatever you want to call me, but in most cases, when we were in the same uniform,
right,
just like you're in the same Saints jersey, that's different, you know, from being in the streets, seeing me downtown, seeing me at City Hall, where I become a ghost. So I don't think anything could happen in a fantasy world.
Arisa, the conversation. Now, is it worth it? White blame, white guilt, African-Americans trying to force the conversation?
I think there are a lot of pitfalls to the conversation.
Okay.
And one pitfall that I've noticed, and this is maybe just for me, but I think it is very difficult for white people really to listen in a race conversation.
Wow.
Really to listen and to give credibility to the experience of everybody else in the room. We're so used to dominating the conversation or assuming that our way of seeing things. So, you know, it has to be structured very carefully.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to go to the callers. And for our callers, please be mindful of everyone else who's trying to get in. Line three, Mr. Lawrence Peaston.
Oh,
thanks for
morning.
Calling. Good morning.
I know y'all running thoroughbreds over there, but here come the jackass.
go ahead. Well, I've been a jackass before, Mr. Lawrence.
My opinion is that, you know, each major race, Mongolians, Africans, Caucasians, have their own little particular quirk.
Oh, I'm no doubt.
About, you know, inside the race itself.
Yes.
And then you have the ethnic groups inside the race have their own little quirks. And I don't think the people mix enough to get to know a person. And I don't think that's what I'm saying. We don't know, because I come up in a neighborhood. I was raised in a neighborhood till I was 12 years old, around South Rampart Street and around City Hall. And we had Jews, Italians, Africans, and anything else you could name around
anything
there.
Anything else.
Yeah. But we got along and we interact every day. Every day we interacted with these people. Good morning, Mr. So-and-so. Good evening, Mr. So-and-so. And I have never, when I was a kid coming up, when I was 12, up until I was 12, not a one of those people called me the N-word. Not a one of them.
Okay, all
because
right.
They know my people.
Uh-huh.
They knew me. They called me by my name. I call them Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so because we had to in my days.
So the solution is in relationships.
You got to get to
Thank
know
you.
The people.
Thank you,
Mr.
Lawrence.
You got to get to know their quirks.
Gotcha. Thank you.
You see now,
wait.
Don't just push me off like that right quick.
I'm sorry. We just had the lines a little. Go ahead.
I'm talking about.
Go ahead.
Each race got their own little way of doing things.
Okay.
And once you get to know that, then you know it's not aiming it at you because you're black.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Lawrence. Line one, Reverend Rickazin, welcome to the discussion.
Good morning, and enjoying the show, and of course, your guest, most out of you. It's a conversation that should happen, need to happen, for those who need it to happen. But my question is, what's going to be the deliverable?
Mm-hmm.
What's going to be the outcome? See, because too often we meet and nothing happens. Let me ask Dr. Cowan, who mentioned about white people feel a lot of guilt. Guilt is something that all human beings feel. We feel guilt in the black community when our sons and daughters are dying in the street. We feel guilt when that handle officer got killed. But the bottom line is simply this. When you go in the boardroom and tell a story, when you go to the Civil Service Commission and give the downtrodden the opportunity to get up, see, that's where the problem is. I don't care if you talk to me or not. Fair and equal treatment is what blacks want. Now, if that makes you feel guilty, be guilty on. Get over it, play on it, and let's move forward. I'm hanging up and listening to what y'all are doing.
Alva, can I give an idea that came out right after Hurricane Katrina? If not, now I'll wait.
No, go ahead.
And so right after the storm, I got a call from a major white businessman, and he called me Jewish guy, I should say.
Yeah, I was going to get into that relationship with you and why it's important, but go, you can start right now.
Well, then let's hold off just a minute. Because I want to dig.
I'm a little old. I just didn't want to forget. I know. Y'all got iPads
The reason why you're here is that's part of the discussion. And
I'll remember.
So I want before we kind of switch into solutions, I want us to dig a little bit deeper into this conversation piece, because I think there is something definitely there around white guilt and inertia.
Absolutely.
And really being honest about our feelings. Ms. Arendt talked about how the conversation has to be structured very carefully. And one of the things that I thought about, you know, as people are listening and releasing power, who we're having the conversation with, the gender roles that they've played, and how they're used to listening and moving differently.
Gender roles are important too, Tramiel. Absolutely important that you weave that in there.
And so the question becomes, when you're having the conversation about race, racism, and structural inequalities, what type of feelings are you trying to elicit? What can happen from the conversation that moves people into action? Because I hear this concept of guilt, and I get it. Guilt, does that negative emotion, doesn't move you into changing anything. What's the positive emotion that's trying to be elicited from those conversations? And then how do we move folks there? And one more piece, because I know we're going to go to break really soon. Brian said something very important about how do we create these conditions that are the things that exist with the Superdome, and acknowledging that is amusement. But if we're Americans and, you know, that we're chasing the American dream and our intent is to enjoy our lives here while on this earth, how do we create those conditions that are similar to the game? These are, you know, related conversations around the conversation in the conditions.
So what I'm really trying to say is that the conversation that has evolved around race is very limited in its potential to generate action for change. And the reason is that it doesn't invite people into partnership, it invites people into guilt. I'll give an example. We are the leading state in the leading nation in incarcerating black males. For the first time, there is a very serious statewide effort going on to do something about that. It's being led by conservative white businessmen. And I promise you that if we had made them go through undoing racism trainings a year and a half ago when we started, they wouldn't be at the table. And it's not that they're bad people. It's not that they're racist. It's that this is not a productive strategy, in my opinion, for generating change. Very few people ever get out of the discussion and into action. And I don't think it's accidental. I think it's a problem with the way the conversation is typically structured.
So, yeah, that's a really good point, is that nobody, I don't care how old you are, what color you are, nobody likes to be talked at. And nobody, and obviously that, you know, there's so many different roots of racism where we are today in 2015, but nobody wants to be told that it's their fault. Nobody wants to be told that, well, I didn't have opportunities in my community because your kind was sucking up all the good stuff and there was nothing left for anybody, you know, and that's kind of going to what Dr. Cowan was saying, is that, hey, you know, these guys were brought to the table from a kind of a common sense perspective, not hey, this is your fault, so do something about it. It's like, hey, this makes sense, so help us do something about it. And that's when they came to the table, and now something's going on.
Pastor, why are you forcing conversation on somebody?
Yeah, guilt. Well, let's deal with the guilt piece. I think historically, if the white community, and this is what my colleagues and I talk about often, if the white community would say, okay, oh, we are guilty of what has happened.
Admit it.
Because we got a psychotherapist, I'm a social worker.
In therapy,
the way to get healed, let's just say it's cancer. I mean, you got to start dealing with what it is. If you don't deal with the guilt, you can't move and evolve into coming up with these solutions we want to try to come up with. And so we got to admit the historical guilt, and not only the guilt, the current and past privileges that whites enjoy, then we can say, okay, if you admit that you're guilty, we're not asking you to pay for any sins. It'd be nice if we got reparations. That'd be really nice, all right? But we're not asking for that. Just an admission in the conversation that there is an historical guilt, then we can begin to move the conversation forward. If we don't admit
what the issue, our issues are, how are you going to move forward? It's like in counseling. It's like in therapy. You got to say, here is the real problem. No, you may not be personally guilty. Your family may not be personally guilty. But in a real universal sense, we know whites have and are privileged, and I call it influenza.
Well, let me say this.
You know,
this is a good
affluenza.
This
I
is a
say.
Good conversation.
Not affluenza.
And where we're going is actually
affluenza. Affluenza goes across racial lines.
Right. Yeah, and that's right. But we're dealing right now, and it does. But my point is, you got to admit to affluenza. Now, are you willing to admit to affluenza?
Are you?
Yes, indeed.
All right.
Wherever I have been guilty of whatever, I am so transparent with life, I enjoy it. Because I go to bed unguilty, I go to bed free, I don't hate people. Now I love everybody, I just don't trust everybody.
And I was
you know what I mean?
I was hoping this next caller would call in.
Well, I'd be happy to admit Victor whatever is wrong, you got to admit to get it right.
Victor Sims, you're on the hour, and I was hoping you would call in.
Yeah.
Good morning. How are y'all doing this morning?
Man, we're doing well. We're having a great discussion, and we're going to go to some solutions.
And I have to call in because you're in my lane with this, so I just wanted to call in and share some thoughts and ideas. One of the things I like to change the definition of a word that was used by one of your guests there, and the word was confrontation. That confrontation really doesn't work. Well, let's change the definition. Confrontation doesn't mean getting in someone's face.
Right.
Confrontation pretty much means I have a question. One person, you say one thing, but you do something different. Can you explain that to me? See, that's confrontation. I need you, individual who's in charge, to explain to me your words are one thing, but your actions are something entirely different.
And on the line right now, we have Victor Sims. He does our monthly segment called Mentally Speaking.
Let me jump on the word guilt.
Go ahead.
Guilt is an uncomfortable emotion. Human beings do not change unless they're made to feel uncomfortable. That is the emotion that causes us to decide to make changes, because the behaviors of today are going to be our history for tomorrow. So if we continue to engage in uncomfortable behaviors today and do not address them, do not confront them, even though they feel uncomfortable, we will not make changes. So feeling guilt is a positive thing. It's because it feels uncomfortable, it doesn't mean it's bad. It only means that I need to do something different so I can get rid of my guilt.
Well, right, we're going to go to the break, and when we come back, we're going to continue this verifiable discussion in this last hour. We're going to begin to talk about some solutions. Dr. Ricky Keys from Grambling, who's following this conversation, he's going to call in and talk about some of the effects economically and socially and physically of racism. And then we're going to get into some solutions, a powerful discussion, a sacred conversation.
So the conversation will continue here on the Good Morning Show. We're having a conversation about race and race matters. We are joined right now by Dr. Michael Cowan, Ms. Arissa Arand, Pastor Tom Watson, and Mr. Brian Trashner. As always, we want to make sure your voices are involved, so stick with us after the break, and the conversation will continue here on WBOK. Real Talk for Real Times.